Hello, Tempest fans. I am the Midnight Host, and I want to invite you to join me every Friday as I enjoy a new horror short story. For fans of The Twilight Zone, Tales from the Crypt, and Creep Show, Don't Fall Asleep is a podcast and YouTube channel featuring modern and classic horror stories. Narrated by Spencer Dillehay, the narrator for Tempest Investigations. Find us on YouTube and in podcast form. Search Don't Fall Asleep Channel on YouTube and Don't Fall Asleep Podcast in Google or your player of choice. Whatever you do, have a pint of Bob's Tail Ale before you go, and don't fall asleep.
Part 6.
So, anyway, that's when I left.
Mercedes finished the story. She wiped her cheeks, where tears had drawn little wet lines.
I haven't spoken to him since.
Connie leaned over the table and took her hand. They were sitting in Jim's living room, which lay above his office on the first floor. Mercedes had closed up the office and sent Matt home after he had helped Connie get her things to her room.
Has he tried to call you?
Yes, many times. I just let it go to voicemail.
Whatever for?
Connie's eyes widened.
Don't you want to hear what he has to say? That I'm a hysterical girl who can't think for herself and can't fathom living in New York?
Connie tilted her head and looked at her niece.
Do you really, in your heart of hearts, think he would say that to you?
Mercedes looked at her feet.
No, I don't. Not really. But I'm afraid he'll say something even worse. That he'll yell at me or say, he doesn't love me anymore.
From what you told me, it's just a few days since you two said those words for the first time to each other. Love doesn't just go away that fast. It's like a flower. It might wither, but it takes time for it to die.
You mean the time I'm giving it right now by not speaking to him?
That's not a bad analogy.
Connie stroked Mercedes' hair.
Maybe you should have a word with him. Just a gentle word.
Oh, I'm not sure what I'd do. I mean, picking up and calling him after dodging him for days?
Connie tapped a finger at her lip.
Yes. How to actually sit down and talk to a man you're in love with? A conundrum, for sure. Honestamente, Mercedes, you should pull yourself together. Don't cry like a baby about it.
Mercedes blinked.
Huh? You're supposed to be on my side.
This isn't about taking sides. It's about getting our heads together and come up with a solution, right? That's why you called me.
Well, yeah, I suppose it is. That's just so... I don't know. I was maybe expecting you to side with me? You know, saying he's an ass and that I'm totally justified in being pissed?
You are. Being pissed is fine, but it doesn't get us anywhere. Let me say what I think. Charlie sounds like he's a nice man, and he fell in love with you because he saw you working on a case in his store. A que sí?
Yes,
Mercedes nodded. She had not told Connie about the exact nature of her work with Tempest, thinking it might be easier for her aunt to not have to cope with shapeshifters and spirits when she was here to talk about boyfriend problems.
You're right.
So, he saw you as a strong, independent working woman. That's what he fell in love with, and that's what he's loved so far. See?
Yes, I suppose so.
No supposing. I've been around the block, Mercedes. I know what men think. They want mystery, excitement, and strength, but they also want reliability. He's relied on you to be this person for all the time you were together, and now you're not that person anymore. You're acting totally different.
What, because I'm sad? I'm not allowed to be sad?
Of course you are. but you're also acting like an ostrich, sticking its head in the sand and hiding. He would expect you to talk to him, to be strong and confident, say what you think, as you did the night you had the fight, but continue to do so. He's probably confused why you haven't answered his calls since then. He's most likely trying to get a hold of you so you can continue the discussion. Maybe he has a different idea now. Maybe he has pictures of houses or apartments to show you. Or maybe he has looked inside of himself and realized he already knew why your job here was so important to you, and he has changed his mind. Who knows? You don't, because you haven't talked to him.
Mercedes took a sip of her coffee and found it had gone cold while they talked.
Oh, I'm afraid, Aunt Connie. I'm afraid to do something wrong and lose him. And at the same time, I know that if I don't do anything, I've already lost him.
She sighed, frustrated.
Dios mío, I feel like such a child.
How about this? Connie took her by the shoulder. How about Charlie and you and I go out for a bite to eat?
You?
Mercedes shrugged.
Why will we go out, all three of us?
Well, first of all, so I can get a good look at the man you care so much about. Second, maybe I can be the chaperone and keep things between you easier. Talk some sense into him.
I honestly don't think that would work. Besides, how do I go from not picking up the phone to, hi, want to have dinner with my aunt?
All right, maybe not the best of ideas. I'll keep thinking. I'm sure we can come up with something.
Connie looked at her watch.
But, speaking of eating, it's about dinner time, and I've barely eaten since this morning. Highway food doesn't agree with me.
Well, we can go out and find something. There are plenty of places to eat around here,
Mercedes said.
I don't know about Jim. He should have been home by now.
She had barely spoken the words before she heard Andrew's motorcycle outside, pulling around the house to the back door.
Let's go down and find out if the guys want to come. I want you to meet them. They're the best.
She got up, wiping her cheeks with both her hands to remove the last traces of tears. She checked herself in the mirror on the wall before leading Connie downstairs. Andrew was coming through the back door, and at the same time she could hear Jim at the front. After working with him for a couple of years, she would recognize his way of jingling his keys instantly.
Hey, guys, I want you to meet...
Her voice tapered off when she saw Andrew's clothes. His white shirt had blood on it, although he didn't move like he was hurt.
What happened?
Andrew looked at Connie, who appeared behind Mercedes in the kitchen door. Mercedes noticed the direction of his gaze, and her eyes widened as she realized that Andrew's answer to that question might not be something Connie should hear. She quickly added,
Did you hit a bunny with your bike? Again?
Her eyes widened, and with her back to Connie, she made a hush face. Andrew nodded slowly.
Huh? Yeah, I did. A big bunny. Jim helped me, get it out of the wheel, so we both got dirty. Good thing you didn't get hurt,
Mercedes said, stepping up to him to verify what her initial impression had been.
You didn't get hurt, right?
No. Well, hit my head a little bit, but, you know, I was wearing a helmet.
Andrew didn't know how to continue the story, so he changed the subject.
We just came back to talk about the case, but... Well, before you do, and I'm, of course, sorry that you're all bloody, but... Andrew, this is my Aunt Connie.
Andrew raised his hand to shake Connie's. He had washed them at the hospital after getting the young man to the ICU, so he wasn't afraid of getting blood on her.
Pleased to meet you. I'm Andrew Picard. Don't worry, I did wash my hands after the... Well, you know, and I apologize for my appearance, but...
Think nothing of it, Andrew. Mercedes has told me much about you all day.
Only the good stuff, I hope.
Andrew looked over Mercedes and Connie's shoulders, where Jim appeared, holding a bundle of letters in his hand, which he had taken from the desk out front.
Great. We finally got the check for that Benson case 2 months ago, and... Well, hello. He looked at Connie. You must be Mercedes' aunt, my new house guest, or so I hear. Welcome.
Thank you. You're Mr. Corrigan, then.
Jim, please. Jim looked at Connie and smiled his professional smile. He could see the resemblance to Mercedes in the woman, but where Mercedes had a natural grace and slender build, Connie was rounder and more massive. Her gray hair had the same volume that Mercedes did, and the eyes were similar. He felt like he was looking through a magic mirror and seeing a possible future version of his assistant. It disturbed him a little. I trust Mercedes showed you where the guest room is?
Yes, I'll be very happy there. Thank you, Jim. Now, I was about to take Mercedes out for a bite to eat. Would any of you gentlemen care to accompany us?
Andrew and Jim exchanged looks. They had come back to the office so Jim could call the prince. But Andrew figured that if Mercedes didn't want them to talk about their case in front of her aunt, it might help to get her out of the house.
I'd be happy to go out for a bite, Andrew said. But I'm a little dirty for dining. Jim, do you have a shirt or something I could borrow? I'll return it tomorrow.
Should have left some of your clothes here, huh?
Jim grinned.
Sure. Just grab one from the closet in my bedroom, although it might be a little big for you.
I'll make it work. Andrew put his hand on Jim's shoulder. But the, paperwork for the case doesn't require both of us, right?
No, it doesn't. You guys go out and have something to eat. I'll wrap things up.
Jim glanced at his own clothes, which also had some blood spatters on them.
And maybe change my own clothes as well.
I'll meet you guys out front in a few minutes then, Andrew said.
Come on, Jim. I don't feel comfortable going through your closet. And if you're changing anyway, you can give me a shirt yourself.
When Andrew, Connie, and Mercedes had left, Jim sat down in his office, lit a cigarette, and found his old address book from the drawer. Even though he now used a cell phone, after the experience with the Soul Eater, he still distrusted the device a little bit. He had put the most important phone numbers into it, but the secret ones, such as the line to the prince, he didn't want to put in. Those were kept in the way he had kept them for 100 years, in the desk drawer. He dialed the number and heard the line ring. Nobody answered for a while, and he almost hung up when a voice answered.
Hello. I'm looking for the prince, Jim said, and added the phrase he knew from the few times he needed to call Lamort was the normal way to get through. Tell him it's a call on his blue line.
The voice, it was a man, Jim could hear, unlike the female voice who he had spoken to last time, replied in a dry tone,
There is no prince right now. The Elysium is suspended. What do you mean, blue line? Who is this?
Jim bit his lip. This confirmed what the vampire in the garage had said, but no Elysium? That was even more serious.
This is a private call for Lamort. Where can I find him?
What does it matter? If you have business with him, you can take it up with the interim regents or wait until the election. If he doesn't win, I doubt he'll be in the city long after that.
But he's still in town? Jim said.
He's running for election?
Of course, but I'm more interested in how you got this number and who you are.
Jim hesitated, but decided to play the intimidation game.
If you're familiar with the Bay Area, I'm sure you heard about the guy who hunted down the Avenue Killer in 1979, or how about the Pacific Heights in 1990?
The voice fell silent a moment before speaking. When it did, it was almost a whisper.
You're the immortal.
Exactly. I don't have any beef in your particular business, but I do have very, very pressing business with Lamort. So tell me where I can find him, or I might take advantage of the no rules situation and start handing out a little justice of my own.
He lives on Telegraph Hill.
The voice was still whispering, but now Jim was sure the man tried to keep his voice down so no one at his end overheard him, instead of whispering out of fear.
Right below Coit Tower, facing the ocean.
Thanks.
I'd ask your name, but I doubt you'd be comfortable giving it to me. You and your friends just remember that the fewer people you hurt, the fewer of you might get killed in return.
Jim ended the call and leaned back in his chair, looking at the smoke from his cigarette and thinking.